Hare Krishna, we are all ready. I hope you had a good lunch, meal, and an energizing sleep. Because I noticed there was Brother Sleep walking around in the morning session. It's a great joy for me. I will present with you, to you, a sequel of our earlier presentation. We have with us our Keli Lalita, so I will give also a summary so that you are well attuned. See, there's still some pilgrims arriving with the breeze. Hare Krishna. The wind is Swarupa who has come. Perhaps we should have...
I think Raghunath is on it.
Yeah. Raghunath is there to welcome you.
It's over here.
Good. Oh! Where is the young man? There. I will first greet... Don't want to be... Hare Krishna, Ravindra I wanted to greet Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, who's my dear friend and also a partner of many interesting discussions, I would say, which we had. Very enlightening and inspiring discussions. So, since he's here, I would officially welcome you in the name of all these people. Ravindra Swarup is one of our oldest devotees and disciple of Srila Prabhupada and known as the philosopher amongst us, the thinking philosopher, Hare Krishna. Welcome. And I'm also seeing the loudest guitar in America. Paramananda Prabhu, Paramananda Prabhu. It is a joy to see you, Paramananda Prabhu. Good. So, I thought in this particular session, let me make this a little softer, continue from where we left off this morning. In the morning we spoke about spiritual life and spiritual progress as a transformation of our sense of identity, our ego. And we also noted that when we leave the old life behind, the life which is constructed by our ego, we first will enter into a space which needs to be filled. It's the space between the old life which we left behind and the new life which we have perhaps not yet realized. So we said that in that space, which is also known as the liminal space, or in mystic language, the threshold between material and spiritual life, all kinds of realizations can happen. We compared it to the waiting room of God. When you sit in the waiting room, you wait for an appointment, but you wait. You have to be patient. And so in the same way, when you are in the stage where you practice spiritual life after having cut away, or in New York English, dumped a few old things, there is this threshold, and it needs to be filled. It needs to be filled with four things. Remember,
sangha.
Good association will help to negotiate that liminal space, which can be quite scary because it's an in-between state. Sangha, yes.
Shastra.
Wow, my God, you are like in a school. Then?
Seva.
And our special emphasis was on sadhana, spiritual practice, right. If you place these four things into that liminal space, or that when you are in the threshold, you can expect a transformation. That is what we were discussing today. In the second part, I would like to speak about one aspect of sadhana, one spiritual practice that is an agent of transformation. And it is actually said that this one practice is ranging superior over all other practices. It is the king of all spiritual practices. And when it arrives on the place, all other practices stand in a respected and supportive way. They're acknowledging that this one practice is extremely powerful. And I want I'm speaking about kirtan, and I would like to give you some guidelines how to make this kirtan for you a process that works very much. Good. But before we start, I want to read to you something which struck me personally the other day. Our first session was called Become Who You Are. It is said that Nietzsche has said this sentence, but it's not entirely true. He's not the origin of the sentence. It's a Greek philosopher called Pindar who said, become who you are. So we wanted to make the point that spiritual life means you grow into that what is already eternal. It's already in reality, that you are an eternal part of God. You just inhabit that. Today I want to start my session by reading you a poem which is very thought-provoking. And after you have heard this poem, I will ask you to form a partnership, a temporary partnership with your neighbor, and discuss with the neighbor about the realizations which you have. Why I'm going with Kostuba Prabhu, because he's intelligent.
Sometimes, like a fly, I'm the closest to
him. And he's very close, yes. And remember, become who you are means that we are engaging the thought that perhaps what we are now is not is a phantom self only. It is not the real self. And spiritual life means to realize the real self. in my last physical visit with Srila Prabhupada was in London. He asked four of us, so have you realized our philosophy? And after we had failed him miserably, our answers were not satisfactory to him. He said, first of all, you have to realize that life is eternal. Found. That's what we are. We are eternal, and so on. So here is a poem for you, and then please discuss it with your neighbor. You have only 2 or 3 minutes time for this, so you need to be a little sharp for this. I'm doing this consciously because, theoretically speaking, we have the graveyard shift. That is the time after you have eaten, all your blood is in your stomach digesting, and I need to awaken you. Here's the poem. I am not I. I'm this one walking beside me, whom I do not see, whom at times I manage to visit, and whom at other times I forget. I'm not I. I am this one who remains calm and silent while I talk, and forgives gently when I hate. I am this one who walks where I am no longer. I am this one who will remain standing when I fall and die. This is by one Spanish author. Something like this. What besides your humorous laughter comes to mind when you hear I'm not I'm? I'm the one who walks where I am not. I'm the one who will remain standing when I fall and die. Please discuss this with your neighbor. It will help you to understand that what is the basis of spiritual life is to understand who we are, at least theoretically. Please start now. 2 minutes, 3 minutes time.
What I thought I had was this idea that there's a witness that the real us is, in one sense, primarily a witness. Witnessing all the movements that we're going through, decisions are being made, actions are being carried out.
I would like to speak about kirtan in the light of it being a powerful agent for transformation in our heart. Transformation in the sense that we are entering the process as we are. We do not leave any part of us aside. And as we engage body, mind, and our voice, with absorption in the chanting does something to us and moves us towards a spiritually accomplished state. We gave an analogy of what is transformation. When you have water and you want for some reason to have vapor, you know, the fog, you need to apply to the water heat. And as you heat the water and bring it to the boiling point, the water begins to change its constitutional well, his its liquidity and turn it to something else. So in the same way, when we do kirtan, we enter in one state, in one state of mind, in one state of heart, and then we come out in a spiritually enlivened, perhaps even enlightened state. Why is this so? Because just like the fire has a vastu shakti, an inherent potency that can affect this change, in the same way kirtan has a vastu shakti, an inherent potency, so that it can work on us sometimes despite of us. Sometimes we enter the kirtan in a state of mind which could be described in New York English as dull. I'm trying to learn your language. As the kirtan works on our heart, it elevates our consciousness, and all kinds of devotional sentiments come. Perhaps we understand, oh, I'm really a part of you, and I want to establish a connection. I long for you. Please help me by taking me out of my present deplorable condition and bring me forward. Many things can come which Jiva Goswami describes as delightful feelings. He says when we do kirtan, delightful spiritual feelings come up. Of what feelings does he speak? Of what emotions does he, to what emotions he refers to? Well, it's all these spiritual emotions which happen when you have removed that guardian before your spiritual heart called the false ego. We talked about him in the morning. We said when you are entering the spiritual path in all seriousness, there will be the ego which will at times obstruct you make noises so that you are distracted at times, and the ego from sometimes doesn't like it. I remember when Ravindra Swarup Prabhu had gone once onto a month-long, you could say, spiritual marathon or a vrata, a sacred vow, where he was chanting a huge number of rounds. And when he came out of this experience, you said you had a feeling that the ego was revolting against this. This is what you will meet when you are on the path of genuine spiritual life. There is an ego who doesn't like it. Sometimes, therefore, you find amongst new practitioners of bhakti ego fights. You find. I have seen with my own eyes. It is because the ego is stirred up. All of a sudden, the old narrative of I'm in the center, I should work for my benefit, is replaced with another spiritual motto. Krishna should be satisfied. You know, this is there. When the ego, however, is removed, when the mirror of the mind is cleansed and the not the ego, the Hridaya Granthi, is slackened, at that time very delightful devotional feelings can come up. Life starts beyond the ego. Haribol! I have seen in the punk scene there was a t-shirt, Nuke Thy Ego. I don't know how successful everyone was in this, but yes, life starts when the false identity, the false sense of I, me, and mine is replaced with a spiritual real or realistic understanding. I am really an eternal part of Krishna. That is awakening. In order, therefore, to chant, or if someone wants to chant kirtan constantly, he has to apply a formula that will reduce the material ego. And this formula is very well known amongst kirtan lovers. I will sing it to you. Trinadapi sunichena taro api sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadari. You can always do kirtan. There will be no obstruction if you learn to reduce the egos by these four methods. You feel yourself as small, a realistic spiritual size is small. You practice tolerance in this world. You offer respect without entering into the respect business, where you say, okay, I offer respect, let me offer $5 worth of respect, then maybe I get $6 worth of respect back. You know, so, no, you offer respect without expecting respect for yourself. These are practices which are practiced amongst kirtan lovers, because they want to do everything that is necessary so that they can chant with deep, abiding taste, no? and enter the more of the amazing potency which is there in the holy name. There was an article in the magazine Psychology Today which received attention even in Germany. The article compared meditation and kirtan, and he research had shown, this is what the writer wrote, that just 12 minutes of kirtan reached higher results than 2 hours of meditation. What type of results? Yeah, of calming the mind. But there's much more than calming the mind that happens in kirtan, and we will deal with these things, and then we will do also some kirtan, some exercises, and so on. So good.
You said there were four elements.
Four elements, yes.
And the fourth one is.
Let's start with the first, feeling humility. It's actually humility. Humility comes from the Latin word humus, and humus is a good earth in which good plants can grow. No? Humility is a good spiritual quality that facilitates spiritual growth because it counteracts the ego. The second is practice tolerance. The third is offer respect. And the fourth is do not expect respect in return. Yes, now you have it. Good. But not just the note-taking, practicing. that is important. I got it all. It's my note. I'm also an avid note-taker, and sometimes I have this illusion, well, it's all here. I have this huge notebook. So,
the Psychology Today article you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm knowing. I have everything in my notebook here. my dear everyone, There are two types of kirtan. Kirtan you can do alone. That's one type of kirtan. But then is the superior form of kirtan, which we do here and which we want to teach this afternoon. It is called Sankirtan. Many people come together and they chant. Again, a great commentator, Jiva Goswami, he lived in the 15th century, wrote a definition of Sankirtan. He said, it's very beautiful. Please listen attentively. Sankirtan means to blissfully meet with many people and to sing about Shri Krishna and to do so loudly for the benefit of others. Oh, I think this is what we try to do today. We what is it? We blissfully meet, not sadly. We meet with many people. We sing about Krishna by singing his holy names, and we do that loudly for the benefit of others. And this heightens the devotional feelings, because when many people enter something, a spiritual practice together, they will each bring their own intensity to the practice, which then gets multiplied in the association of all others. It's this almost cathartic experience which happens in a group which is addressed here. Catharsis is comes from Greek, and I don't know so well what it means. It's somehow, well, here we have a philosopher. What is a catharsis? How would you define
it? Getting rid of stuff.
Getting rid of stuff, my God. getting rid of stuff. It's like a release of things. But how nice your use of language is. You also speak New York English. He can speak on such a high level that we all think, oh my God, we missed school here. So, yes, to overcome things which are harmful for you, perhaps, or which are blocking you in your advancements. In the when you sing together, you are leaving this stuff because there is a strong emotional input. I would like to first give you a material example of this and then a spiritual example. During the World Cup, I forgot which one, good friend of mine who is expert in football said, Maharaj, you got to see this. I said, I have no strong affectionate relationship to football. you will use it in your lectures. You got to see this. And then he showed me a football game between Switzerland and another country which I have forgotten.
So this is soccer, not American football.
Oh, yes. It's the real football. Where you use your good foot. So, yes, I understand. Thank you for the correction. Soccer in your language. So, in this video, it was almost like a documentary. One fan was shown. He didn't know that he was filmed on the movie. So Switzerland entered into a terrible phase of sad defeats. You know, they were suffering one goal after the other. And this football fan was shown, a cultured, middle-cultured man, he started to cry. because he was sitting amongst all the Swiss fans on the Swiss benches in the stadium, and they were just, you know, heightening their feeling of profound grief when their beloved team lost. But then, listen to this. Then something changed. Maybe the karma of this football team changed, and they began to score. Score means shoot one goal after the other with the foot. You have to be very precise here. And as they were scoring, this fan was shown how from a state of intense grief he changed into a state of euphoric joy. It was just so volcanic, the joy which came out. At the end, he took off his shirt and he was waving it in great jubilation, a gesture which we know from spiritual circles. When saints are arriving at a person's house, the person will often dance and use his upper garment to swing it. It is a sign of extreme jubilation, cross-cultural it is done. Not only... So this is the power of an experience that is shared with others, where each one brings also his share or his part into it, and then the group who is relishing or experiencing that experience comes to a state of heightened emotions. So in kirtan, we also experience the strengths of someone of others. Although my voice is not very good, I happen to be often invited to lead kirtan. And I have been in the situation that people in the crowd were not participating nicely, often after heavy noon meals. they were not able to go into it. And no matter what I tried, changing the pitch, there are a few things which you can do, requesting the midanga player to play a thunderous rhythm and so on, or well, no matter what I tried, the kirtan didn't get anywhere. But I have also been in kirtans, as a participant in kirtan, where we could see that due to the proper tune in, the audience was properly tuned in, as a group of chanters, we all experienced the heightening of our emotions. I compare this often with a flood which comes into a harbor and then raises all the ships. No? Water, during a flood, can do so. So in the kirtan, it is often seen that as the kirtan goes on and everyone sincerely tries to be focused on the sound vibration and to be in the devotional mood to glorify, that is what kirtan means, to glorify the one who performs uncommon acts and who has uncommon beauty. It's a, you know, Krishna. So if they are tuned in and they do it together, there is tremendous change happening. I want to tell you an illustration from Mauritius, where we had a 3-day kirtan festival, and at the end of the festival, people came to the various kirtan leaders also to me to thank them. And there was one man in the long, there were a few thousand kirtan singers there, one man who came in this queue, which came to me. And I was speaking, and I was looking from the corner of the eye at this man, and the man had a suspicious, bulky pocket here. There was something in his pocket which was suspicious and which made me fear. So he came closer and closer and closer, and he noticed that I looked at that bulky put in the pocket, and he said, "Yes, it's a gun." I have been threatened with pistols in the past. So
this is America.
No, this was yes. So we can talk openly about it. And, I said, "So what do you want to do with it?" He said, "The better question would have been, what did I want to do? Not what do I want to do, what did I want?" I actually took this thing and I wanted to go to the beach to shoot me, because my wife left me without a reason. We quarreled, but that's normal. And then she just said, "That's enough," and left. And but then I came by this tent where this music was going on, the singing, I did not know. And I thought, well, let that be my last party and my last dance. You know. So then I sat in this kirtan, and now I don't want to go to the beach any longer to do the thing. Because he had experienced the cathartic, is that the right word?
Cathartic.
Cathartic experience of kirtan, where a vastu shakti, that means an inherent energy that works despite of you. It is this, like fire that burns in whatever mood you are, it always burns. He had experienced the vastu shakti of the kirtan. And because there were many, and they were singing very nicely in Mauritius, very concentrated, there was an effect on him. There is a very nice description of doing praise together in the scriptures. There are a few, but I want to tell you one from the Bhagavatam. There was a time when the earth was overrun by military forces, you know, different military armies who were fighting with each other. And the enlightened devatas prayed for an avatar, an appearance of Krishna, to help Mother Earth. So they all went to the shore of the ocean, where they joined a particular prayer. It's sung like a kirtan, Purusha Evedam, and so on, this Vedic chanting. And they were led by the creator of the universe, Brahma. So the question which a commentator asked is, why did Brahma not go alone and asked the Lord through this prayer to make his appearance? Why did he go with many? He had prayed alone. There is in the 10th canto a beautiful chapter, it's the 14th chapter as far as I remember, where these highly philosophical prayers of Brahma are there, who had prayed alone. And Krishna had heard him and accepted his prayer. Why this time he went with many? Was alone not enough? And the explanation is that group petitioning that is more intense. It is more concentrated. It's more substantial, and the Lord cannot remain passive when he hears the group petitioning of his devotees on earth. So there are two things happening in kirtan: heightened feelings due to the group idea, and second of all, you will see during the kirtan that there is also a more intense divine reciprocation. My dear everyone, on the path of bhakti, this is one of the basic foundational I'm not sure if that's the right word, a law which builds a foundation of the whole practice.
Fundamental
perhaps, yes. In Sanskrit it is yeya tamang prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyaham, which translates roughly into English, you get what you put into. Let us not be too much influenced by the New York way of saying things. According to your devotion, according to the effort, the Lord reveals himself and reciprocates. No? We would not be able to continue on the bhakti path without divine reciprocation. It would be like calling into the wilderness and not receiving any response. Then we would perhaps feel there's no one there who hears me. In kirtan, I have seen very new people who, not just like the suicide candidate from Mauritius, but just very new people who come and who are swept away by a surge of devotional feelings. Therefore, in the scriptures, it is like the Bhagavatam, it is said that the chanting of the holy name gives the highest result, especially in this age. There is this verse, just now I forget the beginning lines, but it's Kirtanat Eva Krishnasya. I'm a little bit sleep deprived, so I just forget. It's a strenuous tour. Kale dosha nide rajan. The age in which we live is compared to an ocean which has so many faults, so many mistakes. However, there's one good quality in all of this, that simply by the kirtan of Krishna, mukti sangha, one gets liberation, or one gets rid of stuff, one has this cathartic experience, and this is not all. Paramgatet, one goes towards the supreme goal, just by sitting and experiencing this. One of our kirtan leaders who left his body in March, His Holiness Kadamba Kanana Maharaj, we were close to each other because we are from Europe. He said something so nice about kirtan. He said, I have come to the kirtan. I have booked my seat in the train. Now I only need to get into the rhythm of the kirtan, and then this train of kirtan will carry me to Goloka Vrindavan. This is Vastu Shakti. The train has a potency. If you believe in it or not, if you are this candidate or that candidate, it moves you. If you just stay in it, and as we noticed earlier, if you do something that is dissolving or at least removing the false ego from the central place in your life, not by practicing these wonderful qualities of humility, of tolerance, of respect, and of not expecting validations from others so much. No? I would like to now guide you in a little kirtan session where we can do a little bit more conscious the kirtan. Are you interested in an experiment?
Yes.
Good. I have to do a little discussion here. Is there one which could end in dancing? Yeah. Yes. So we got the right raga. Now, which tonality? The train is getting ready.
So this is our only sense for recognition.
So please only accelerate when I give the sign. Yes. Yeah. We will accelerate, but after some time. Hare Krishna. It's not too deep. So, ready?
Yes.
I request all of you to sit straight now. Kindly open the volume of your breathing by just bringing your shoulders up and then rolling them back. Do you know that we only use 20% of our lung capacity? We need all of you. All of the capacity. I request you to center yourself. We will do now a very sacred, very spiritual activity. We will chant together the holy names. And we will do this in a certain mood. Oh my Lord, I have fallen into this ocean of material birth and death. The waves are troubling me. There are so many unfavorable circumstances. But today I turn to you. I am simply your part. I belong to you. Please pick me up and bring me to the safe sanctuary of your lotus feet. Hare Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. everyone, you need to tune in a little bit more. You see, the singing quality is first class. Heart quality, first class. Voice, first class. Melody is to be improved. So just hear as I chant, because otherwise we fall out of the rhythm and our rhythm section is getting bewildered. So, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Yes, very good now. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Hare,
Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
I'm gonna go get some more. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You were really chanting very nicely. We have heard here, Kostova and myself, we are in an auspicious position. We can hear all this very directly. There is a concept which you might like to apply in your life. See what I have here? It's an ragini, and I can tune it. Now I tune it higher. What's the highest here? I tune it. Do you hear it? It's called a ragini. It is an electronic, you could say, copy of a tambura. I'm tuning it, no? To the melody which we will play. So I can take my hand and I can use either an instrument like a tambura, a stringed instrument, or this, and tune it to the right pitch that is desirable and helpful. In the same way, in kirtan, you can tune your body, your voice, and your heart so that it serves you well as a sadhana sharira, that is a machine for spiritual practice, or an instrument, I wanted to say, for spiritual practice. And the tuning which you need to do if you want to have the greatest immersive experience of kirtan is, you need to tune your body by just sitting and pronouncing the mantra nicely with the lips and hearing it. These are purely physical aspects of the kirtan. Then you tune in your mind. Perhaps you have noticed when you try to chant for some time, the mind will sometimes go to some other unrelated subject. Have you noticed? In India they call this the monkey mind. You have not seen monkeys unless you go to India. They grab things, they drop things, they all of a sudden something comes into them and they start dashing over the place with no apparent goal, and then they threaten the other monkey, and then they retreat shrieking in fear, and so on. The mind does similar things. It grabs onto a subject, it drops the subject, it swings to another subject, oops. It threatens mentally, oh, why did this person dare to inconvenience me? Then there were other words are used in this context, threatened, and then you are afraid, oh no, oh, I blew it, you know, and so on. The mind is really, during kirtan, you sometimes will notice that the mind is not you. It will do its own activities according to the culture of an amoeba. Amoeba is a single cell. It either likes things and accepts it, or it rejects it. It doesn't take it into its system. So the mind accepts and rejects at all times. This is called the small mind, not the amoebic mind. You will meet him when you chant. Therefore, you need to also tune in the mind by consciously bringing it back and letting it absorb and relish the sound vibration of yourself singing and of the whole atmosphere, building a sacred atmosphere. But perhaps the most important part of kirtan is to engage the heart. Here with heart, we don't mean the physical heart, of course not, nor do we mean the emotional heart, you know, where romantic feelings come and go, perhaps, or feelings of desire or feelings of happiness and distress come. When we want to engage the heart in kirtan, we speak of the heart as the place where the soul and the Lord in the heart, the Paramatma, is residing, the super soul. It's from here that we can have a genuine expression. When we sometimes hear kirtan singers encouraging us, sing from your heart, they don't refer to now be very romantic and feeling. They want to encourage us, come to yourself, be who you are, let the real you sing, and express devotional songs or devotional feelings to Krishna. And then you are properly tuned. This is B. It's not good for the melody which we sing. Then I sing, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Do you see? It's out of tune. I have to tune it. We are now on C. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. It's tuned. It harmonizes. So you need to tune your body, your mind, and also your heart, meaning the seat of the soul, so that you can engage in complete, total immersive sankirtan. My dear everyone, this is really the most effective transformative agent, because it is the strongest possible force in this world, are the names of God. They are imbued with His divine presence. In fact, they are the Lord. And as we chant, more and more, we will more and more realize the divine, inspiring, energizing presence of the Lord in our life. And I wish you all the best. My recommendation for you is, if I would be you, many of you look like born musicians. You can learn perhaps the instruments and sing, make in your town a little kirtan group, you know, kirtan, you make a little advertisement, first class kirtan, and then people will come, normally might come. You learn the instruments nicely, or if you are shy, you can sing in the bathroom, you know, anywhere, perhaps, you know, when I'm just saying, you can sing on your own, or you can do what many do. They type in a good kirtan address in the internet, and there is good kirtans. There are first class recorded kirtans done by really accomplished kirtan singers on a web page which Gokrishna can give you. It's Radha Deshmelos, right? But I don't know, dot something and something else and so on. So yes, you can then sing along with those kirtans or attend a kirtan event. Here I know on the Super Soul Farm there are many kirtan events, many guests. Somehow or other, please learn the art of kirtan, and as you learn it and go deeper into it, you will find all of a sudden that your life has become auspicious overnight. You didn't know how it happened, but it happened. This is the common experience of those who have taken to kirtan. It's because of the divine shaktis or potencies in the kirtan. One is the staraka shakti that liberates us from our obstacles, inner hurdles, so to say. And the other is the Paraka Shakti. It's an energy which attracts you to Krishna. And human reason really fails to understand how this works. But you will say, wow, I'm feeling now, I'm moving forward in my spiritual life. This is what I wanted to share with you today, in the evening session or afternoon session. I would like to now request our Kostuba Prabhu to share a few ideas on kirtan, so that we have the wisdom of the sage feeling here. Yes, we will give you a microphone, Kostuba, so that it's recorded for the
Maharaj, in many ways I feel like you took us on the whole path and we completed it, so I don't want to say too much. And you spoke it in a New York way so that we could all understand perfectly.
Trying to learn your language. New York language is very, you know, it's very direct, I find it. Yeah.
Maybe a little abrasive.
Yes.
You shared so many things. I'll just respond to some of the things that you said and the thoughts that arose in me when you mentioned those things. And I mentioned earlier, last night, when we all got together in the beginning, that Raghunath and I, really all we're trying to do, we both feel very fortunate that when we were young men, that important people came forward. People like Satchinanda Maharaj, people like Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, who had walked this path in front of us, and they took us along. And they introduced us to so many things. They introduced us to practices, they introduced us to places, they introduced us to special people. And it changed our lives. And so all we're really trying to do is trying to see if we can extend that to all of you and give you those same kind of opportunities to meet those kind of people and come to those kind of places and hear those kind of thoughts and then see how that plays out in your own lives. And when you were speaking, this point is so special. You mentioned the Lord Brahma and with the demigods, and they go to the ocean and they find Lord Vishnu there. It's such a cinematic scene. And you know, earlier today when we're here, we're speaking about this particular lineage, this Gaudiya Vaishnava lineage, and what's unique about it and what's special about it. And so many different lineages, important commentators could look at that pastime, have looked at that pastime, and they could derive different thoughts from it, learn different things from it. They might say, oh, just see, all the devas are humbly submitting their prayer to Lord Vishnu. This indicates the unique position of Lord Vishnu amongst the... He's the deva, he's the god of the gods. It's indicated right here, just you can read this, you can see. But within this lineage, our teachers looked at it and said, oh, there's something else here very important. Take a look at this. Think about it. Did you think of this? Did you recognize this? They all went together. Right? That this is how we practice. Particularly in this age, this is how we practice. That it's not that we go off alone and with our own strength. We practice yoga and we conquer the mind and we conquer the senses. We're weak. But if we go together, you know, then the Lord becomes pleased by that. And this is an effective practice of yoga. You know, so it's a way of seeing things. At this point, this Sankirtan, coming together and doing this, I was reminded of a time when I was brought on one pilgrimage. It was a very special pilgrimage. You may have been there, Maharaj. I know Ravindra Swarup Prabhu was there. This was Gora Mandala Prakrama, probably 1992 or 93. It was over 30 years ago. And it was a life-changing experience, very wonderful. You know, it was 9 days of wandering around the holy places there in the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya, camping out everywhere we went. It was about 1,200 people, I think. And everybody, magic was happening and everybody was feeling it. It was the kirtans were just wonderful. All the talks were just so captivating. All the feasts, they were just bringing out prasad for every feast. It was, and the land itself was so beautiful. It was almost like the eyes couldn't drink it in enough. We went around like this for nine days doing nothing else. Setting aside all of the, you know, this is at the time where from all around the globe people come to that place, different devotees from different places, and a lot of times they have to work out all the institutional issues, which can be less than fully inspiring. And you know, but now everyone was getting together and just hearing, just chanting and doing it together in such a special environment. Everyone was feeling very uplifted. And at the end, you come back to where you started, at the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya. And at the beginning, though, my guru looked at me. I was a young practicing monk. He was a very senior monk and a very demanding monk. And so he looked at me, he gave me his, we're just about to take our first steps for 9 days going around. He gave me his bags and he said, "You take my bags and you don't leave my side for the next 9 days." Okay. I'm like, "Yes, Gurudev." You know, it's like being in the military kind of with him. So I know there's no independence, I'm just right next to him the entire time. But I was very happy when he said that, you know, it's like a special opportunity. And it was, the entire thing, you know. And then we got to the end. And we come back to the place where we started, the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya. And different people spoke, different senior devotees, senior leaders spoke. And I was sitting right next to my guru, as he ordered me to. And I was watching his response to how everyone was speaking. And he was appreciating. Everyone had fresh realizations, and he was. I could see he was appreciating. He was appreciating, but I didn't see any particular spark. And you know, and then Ravindra Swarup Prabhu spoke. I don't know if you know how he reacted to it.
We are all going back to Godhead together. I think.
Yes. He said. He said. I think you shared. I believe it was at that time, I think you shared that Srila Prabhupada once said that we will all be together back in the spiritual world. And that your response to that was like, "Oh no, I'm not sure if I want that." Because we're always, you know, there's always these tensions in a spiritual institution. But what you mentioned was you said this experience of 9 days out in chanting is that we don't go back to God alone. We all go together. And when you said that, my guru, he just lit up. He said, "That's the point. Said, that's the point. That's what we were here to understand. This is the exact point. So this is our practice, you know."
Well, that's why it's called Sankirtan. Sankirtan means together.
Yeah, it means everyone together. And Maharaj, earlier when you were speaking, you quoted this poet with a difficult to pronounce name, and he was, if I remember correctly, saying, "I am not that I."
Yeah.
Right? I'm a different I. I'm the I that when this I dies, I'm still standing.
Yeah. Right?
There's one, you know, this word Atma, the Sanskrit word for self, it means the soul, but it actually also means, it can be used to refer to the mind, it can be used to refer to the body, because in a more superficial sense, this is me. My mind is me. But in the more deeply fundamental sense, it's only the soul that's truly me. That's absolutely me. But you mentioned something towards the end, Maharaj, and it was just a quick little thing, but I think it's so important, is that there's the true me underneath it all, the soul, the eternal soul, the soul that never changes. It never changes. It's eternal. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is going to say, you can't burn it, you can't cut it in half. It's irreducible. Right? It lives forever. It has always lived. It will always live. Nothing can change it. And then there's the more superficial me, the mind, always changing, like a monkey running here, running over there, changing all the time. And then there's the body. Right? And we suffer in life because there's a tension between these three. Right? The mind is thinking one way, but it's out of harmony. As you were saying, you could harmonize these. It's out of harmony with... Sometimes the mind is out of harmony with the body. And the body's out of harmony with the mind. And they're both out of harmony with the self. But the word yoga means union. Right? It means bringing them all together, getting them all on the same page, harmonizing the body with the mind, harmonizing the body and the mind with the self. Right? But how do you harmonize them? It's the self is the only one that doesn't change. So if it's out of tune, it's because the body's out of tune and the mind's out of tune. Right? The self is never out of tune. So a really practical way to understand what union or what yoga is it means consciously harmonizing, tuning the body and the mind with the nature of the self. But how do we understand what the self is? What is the nature of the self? We don't know that through speculation. The great philosophers have asked this question, who am I? Right, the most fundamental question, who am I? We learn that by hearing. Right? We can go to these sacred texts and they'll inform us about the nature of the self. Right? They'll inform us about the self's eternality. They'll inform us about the awareness that is the nature of the self. They'll inform us about the bliss that is the nature of the self. And some of the more esoteric teachings will help us understand that by nature, we're a lover. At our very core, we love Krishna. And we've forgotten that. So we hear that. You have to hear that. You hear it again and again, and you examine it from different angles. And the more that you examine it, the more that it begins to make sense. It begins, all the pieces begin to, with that right there at the center, all the pieces of this big yoga puzzle, of these big philosophical issues that we struggle with, the whole human experience that we go through, it begins to become clear if we put that in the center. And then we work through our practices to harmonize the body. Now I'm going to decide how I'm going to use this body in harmony with understanding my relationship with Krishna. And I'm going to gradually work with bringing my mind in harmony with my nature of being a lover of Krishna. And when we get them all lined up, and when the whole thing becomes harmony, just like the kirtan, the rhythm, and the, it was struggling a little bit, and then it got it, and then it, and then you feel a sense of satisfaction. So this satisfaction, the Bhagavatam has called it Atma Supersiddhiti, the complete satisfaction in the self. You might find a little satisfaction here and there, it goes, and we find a little satisfaction for the body, it's gone quickly. We find a little satisfaction for the mind, it's gone quickly. But if we can harmonize them with the nature of the self, which never changes, then we can find that real satisfaction, the Atma Supersiddhiti, that satisfaction that once you get that all aligned, you feel something special, something different. You become something very different. Not different from the people of this world, right? But you actually become the true self. Your true self arises, and that's the true goal of yoga. The true goal of yoga. This one point Srila Prabhupada took great pains to explain. He came to the United States in the 60s, he was here in the 60s and 70s, and there was talk of yoga. And people had different ideas about what yoga was. And a lot of times those ideas are, I guess we might call them, I don't know, like romantic, in a sense. This idea that I'm going to wander off. Right? And I will by my own yogic power, you know, attain this goal of yoga. Here was a man that was such an accomplished yogi already, coming to the West and saying, There's no need to even try this way. You can achieve, here it is in the Bhagavad Gita, look at Arjuna. Right? It's if you simply give your mind, give your heart to Krishna, you achieve this goal of yoga. You achieve it more quickly. You achieve it more easily. And those other paths, you will struggle and struggle and struggle. Even we can give you so many examples. Here's an example of this great yogi, so austere, so brilliant, so renounced, and still tripped on the path. Here's another one, here's another one, here's another one. It doesn't have to be so difficult. We just have to, and as you're pointing out, try to be humble. Try to be tolerant. Show respect. Don't demand respect. And chant these names. And chant them together. And it takes off. And it's kind of like being on a strong boat. You know, if we're trying to cross the ocean like with just ourselves, in one little boat by ourselves, we never make it. It's rowing away and waves are coming. If you get on the big ship, and on that ship, it doesn't matter if you're the front of the ship, doesn't matter if you're in the middle of the ship, doesn't matter if you're the back of the ship. When the ship arrives, everyone arrives together. Mm-hmm. This was the point. Mm-hmm. And you know, as I'm growing older, my guru passed away over 20 years ago. And you know, the memory gets there's so many instructions and examples and things that have slipped my mind. But when you mentioned that came to my mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll always remember. Mm-hmm. It's there. How he responded to Rindasuru Prabhu's message. Mm-hmm. That this was all that we have to learn. You know, this was the point. We all go back together. Mm-hmm. It's such a beautiful point. Thank you, Maharaj, for sharing. Thank you, Rindasuru Prabhu, for sharing.
Hare Krishna. I would suggest just before we all end the session that we just hear a few words from our guest of honor who arrived today. Rindasuru Prabhu, would you like to share with everyone a little on the kirtan experience? Okay. We have a microphone for you. For the.
That's great. I was there.
Yeah, I also was.
You remembered.
Yeah.
What was I? Before I was a
Jayanti,
I was a philosophy major in college. And it was a very distressing philosophy. It was logical positivism and stuff like that. And then I found out that that was at the University of Pennsylvania, that at Temple University there was actually had a religious studies department. So I went into religious studies the guy that taught us Hinduism was Swami Nikalananda from the Ramakrishna Mission, and it was completely Mayavada, impersonal kind of philosophy. But during that time, I finally happened to meet devotees, and. One thing one of my professors has said, the question isn't whether God exists, but is God available? And when I discovered Krishna consciousness, here, how is it available? The three, you know, Hare Krishna and Rama, that God is available. And that you can associate with God, and that association is purifying. And so I tried it, and one thing you learn from Buddhism is you have to extirpate your desires, get rid of your material, what they just said, desires. And I found out that by chanting, these desires went away. They went away so fast, I didn't know what to do with myself. Was a little bit of a crisis, you know. And then I said, okay, we'll look at it again. And then I finally met Krishna devotees that were there and saw some of Prabhupada's books. Although the devotees were a little rough on in those days. Sometimes they would go at the temple, they would be around the altar and not so the deities wouldn't see karmis, ridiculous thing like that. You know, it wasn't very inviting, but there was prasadam, you know, things like that and stuff like that. And so I kept looking for like, what am I supposed to do? Because the devotees were attractive. Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita had just come out, the Macmillan edition, you know, and I was reading that stuff. But the devotees were like really, really harsh, you know. They would say things like, that's not a topic of conversation, stuff like that, you know. They're difficult to get along with, you know. But I happened to have at home Balaram. Mm-hmm. I had picked it up during my first vacation after college, and we went to an import plaza in Oregon, and I had a little bit of money. I worked on it. Machine that made pallets and tin cans and packing for shipping away. And so I had some money. We went to what was the name of that place?
Was it
Pier
1?
Yeah, it was a Pier 1. And there I see these little things. Basket, and there are these little guys in there, and some are white and some are black and some are yellow, you know. And I only had enough money for one, so I sort of went through some mail process, and I brought Lord Balaraman home. Balaram's really good because that's where spiritual strength comes from, is from Balaram. That's what it means. And so I just sort of put him on my wall and then I was doing graduate religious studies and things like that. And then one day I met devotees and I found out who Lord Balaram was. And I thought, wow, I said, who is that? That's Balaram, you know? Oh, I know what that, they had him, there was a temple in Philadelphia, and they had deity showed up of Krishna and Balaram, the Nosubhadra, that come down from somewhere. And I said to the temple president, who are these figures? And the black one's Krishna, the white one's Lord Balaram. And I said, well, I don't know what to do about this, but I have him. I have him at home. What do I do? And without pause, the guy said, worship him. Okay. So I went and I picked him. I had him up on a shelf or something. And I picked Lord Balaram up. And I saw that the black paint that made the pupils of his eyes had flaked off. And I knew right away what it was. He didn't want to see all my sinful activity. So I got a little magic marker. I opened the eyes back up, you know. And I'd, you know, gotten beads from the devotees and started chanting and everything. So that you know, the point is that, you know, God comes to you sometimes like that, you know. You just like a sort of, and it's not subtle. It's like quite overwhelming. And so then I was going to college in this religious studies department, but the religion that taught was all Mayavada philosophy, and everybody that was Hinduism for as far as everybody knew like that. And yeah, bhakti, if you're a little emotional, okay, that's bhakti, okay, but really if you really want to get yourself, you know, And of course, with the Mayavada philosophy, you're God. that's the other kind of thing. And but when I met the Lokis, you know, it was. Anyway, the point is that I've Krishna tracked me down. As it wasn't me going to God, it was God coming to me, you know, in a very powerful way. And so one thing led to another, and the temple. And then I ended up being the temple president. I had no business being a temple president. Mm-hmm. We got initiated by Prabhupada in New York. I remember I went up and Prabhupada had beads. The beads we had weren't Tulsi, by the way. They were Nim beads. That's what that was available. And he said to me, "Your name is Lucy." That's what I did. And I said to the guy next to me, "What did he say my name was?" And he said, "Govinda Swarup." That didn't sound quite right. Govinda Swarup, you know? So I went to Rupanuga and I said, "What is my name?" He said, "Govinda Swarup." He said, "No, Ravinda Swarup." I said, "Oh," and then everybody told me, "Oh yeah, some other devotee had that name before." "Well, who was that?" I said, "That's some crazy hippie." Robert reused names like that, you know. So that's, you know, how I ended up. And then because I was the oldest person around and had actually held down jobs, I became the temple president. I was not qualified whatsoever, but somehow or other, you know, Krishna, one thing led to another, and then we had the Bhaktivedanta Institute of people with PhDs and stuff like that, and so I had one, and anyway, that's things happen sometimes, if you don't know why, but what I did discover was that the most important thing is that human life, Prabhupada put it very simply, human life is meant for self-realization, not for sense gratification. And that's really very, very important. And that you can take it one step at a time and just add Krishna, that Prabhupada said, just add Krishna. So that's, and somehow Krishna makes it possible. We are all here today because Krishna has made something possible. And you just have to take, if you look at the whole thing, you think, "Oh my God, I'll never do it." But if you just take the next step, just the next step, and add something, a little more Krishna to it, And then, of course, we had Prabhupada's books, and he had given us the Bhagavatams and all these things like that. We have all these resources now, which we didn't even have in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And the first Bhagavatam I read was the one from India with full of typos and things like that. Mm-hmm. Somehow or other, it was all there. So, anyway, take the next step. Because human life is meant for self-realization. That's the main thing that we can do as human beings, and take the next step. And whatever, even if we don't make all the progress in one lifetime, if we are serious about spiritual life, next birth we'll keep on going where we left off. So there's no waste.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. It is always, I think we learn very much from those who have walked the path in front of us. Good. Let me just end the session. by first of all looking discreetly on the wristwatch. yes, we are in the proper time frame. My dear everyone, this was our only chance where I could see you. We will leave this evening already back to New York in order to take a flight to Dallas tomorrow at an inhuman early time. I really would like to leave you with this idea that transformation is possible. In Tibet they have this proverb: a change is possible, otherwise there would not be any butterflies. You know, mm-hmm. The butterfly has changed from a caterpillar through various other stages to come to this. So it is possible to in this life to really move forward. You only need to know that I require a strong transformative agent so that I'm not thrown back, to say, so to say, to my own little strengths, weak strengths. And this means very practically that you see how you can do a spiritual practice. I wanted to just give you an example. Today I was a little, you know, driving so much and traveling so much is strenuous. This after the lunch prasadam, I decided, okay, I will speak today to all of those who are in attendance about the transformative power of the Holy Name. Let me do this myself. And I went into the forest, I found a good place, and chanted there on my own, and then came fully recharged and absolutely enthusiastic and even physically rejuvenated here. So always find this time where you can implant the powerful transformative process into your life and see the miracles that will subsequently unfold. I thank you very much. Our time together, at least for now, is up. I will still be here. I will first talk with Ravindra Swarup Prabhu before he leaves us again. And yes, and I wish you all the best. And maybe we see each other in the small windows on Zoom. Haribol.
Maharaj, thank you so much for coming. You came a long way to spend a short time with us, but we really appreciate it.
Hi, I'm Anat Harik.